Mike Podcast, Mental Health for the Culture.
We address real life topics and brainstorm real solutions.
This podcast is meant to be informational and not to serve as a personal counseling session. If you feel that you have some mental health issues that need to be addressed, please find a counselor near you.
Hey, Nedra.
Hey, Kendra T.
How you doing?
I am well. How about you?
Oh, I'm great. All right. So first, let's talk about some things that are in the news. I just saw this today on Instagram. The show that we discussed in a previous episode, Love Is.
Okay. Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
About.
Okay. The creator and producer, Salim Akil, and his wife is also a producer, a showrunner, or whatever, Mara Brock Akil. This show is about their love story. So he is caught up in some things right now where a side piece that he has had a long time relationship with is accusing him of domestic violence. I mean, kind of like some BDSM, which is, you know, the sexual torture, masochism things that people kind of like, but in a domestic violence kind of way. So
how do you beat your side piece?
When you get around them and you use the power that you might have. I think she was in the industry wanting to be an actress. Mm. You use that power to, you know, kind of say, well, this is what I like to do. Let me do this to you. You know, if you want to stick around, you're going to let me slap you up. You know, I think it sounded like it was something like that. So I don't know how far these charges are, you know, in the legal system, but the show has been canceled.
Has it?
Yeah. That's what I saw.
I didn't know that part, but I guess that makes sense because you can't have a show like Love Is.
Right.
And y'all having all these issues that are a reflection of this relationship that people have come to,
look at, trust, believe in.
That could have been a part of the story, though. But I'm
later
shocked.
On.
Too fresh.
Yeah. The first season was about basically them meeting in the early weeks or months of their relationship. So I would imagine the next few seasons would be exploring further into the relationship because they've been married for 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, they, you know, they have some time together. And so when I first heard this story on The Breakfast Club, I didn't understand if she knew about the side lady or not, if that claim is being denied or not. I don't know, but I did see today that it's canceled.
Oh, today? This is new news?
Yeah, today, okay. Fresh from Instagram.
News from Instagram. I bet a lot of people get their news from Instagram these days,
I think,
right?
So. We've discussed that we both get our news from Instagram.
Yeah.
Especially pop culture news. But yeah, so in some of the comments were saying, oh man, couldn't they just replace them? You know, they couldn't get another showrunner for it because other shows have had showrunners ripped off and then...
It's their story. That's why it's so, like, such a thing. It's their love story that's actually not really a love story, maybe. I don't know.
No matter what's happening now in their relationship, that doesn't negate the love story that it started out as.
It does for the people who have this new information and... They're going to have to figure out for themselves, like, is this a valid story? I already know the ending it is. I think viewership would just be, like, down the tubes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we won't ever know because it's over. Okay. Also in the news recently, this is pop culture news, Michelle Williams and Chad, I don't know his last name, were engaged and they broke up. And they had a reality show that was following them in couples counseling, premarital counseling for a couple of weeks. And I know a lot of their issues on that couples counseling show was about her battles with mental illness and mental health and mental wellness. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And his support of it and how he was supportive of it. But yeah, they broke up. And I saw again in some of the comments, people were saying, well, you know, he seemed more like a therapist, more like he was like a therapist mate than a spouse or a partner in that way, you know? Are you
what
familiar
is a
with
therapist?
Their relationship? I just made up that actual term, but basically what they said was
he was counseling her?
You know how sometimes when people are in a relationship together, they can be codependent, as you would say, but I don't know if you would describe this as codependent, but they are together in a way where you see where one person is obviously kind of holding up the other person, holding them together when they need to, because they might fall apart at any minute. Like, hey, did you take your meds? Did you, are you getting some rest? You seem a little edgy. Come on, let's go talk to your doctor.
He was protecting her mental health and trying to be like her mental health advocate even when she wasn't doing it for herself.
Well, I mean, you just totally made that way more professional than what the comments were saying. you cleaned that up nicely. I guess in their own layman's terms, they were kind of saying that. It just seemed like more of a therapist-client type relationship than a loving, caring, romantic relationship. That's what some of the comments were saying.
It sounds like it was a good thing that, you know, he or she got out when they did, because I think with codependent relationships, you can tell really early that you're like over helping someone, or you want something more for someone than they possibly want for themselves, or maybe they're not in the space to heal, maybe they don't know how, but definitely having to remind people, hey, take your medication. Did you call your doctor? Did you, you know, that's a lot of work up front.
It is.
I'm not willing to sign on for anything like that.
And at one point early in their relationship, earlier, they broke up and she checked herself into a mental health facility. Now, I don't know if she checked herself in because they broke up and she was having a hard time dealing with it, but it was all around the same time. So that has been something present in their relationship. Yes, they were broken up and she checked herself in. That kind of brought them back together because he reached out to her in support, and that kind of, they got back together after that, and then were together and then engaged. So
yeah, I think that's a lot to sign up for with a boyfriend, a girlfriend, and they've had this issue and it's ongoing, and they're not participating in their care as you know they should be. You are now kind of like a watchman and waiting for them to kind of like have their episode. And I think, you know, if that's something that someone is aware of and they're very public about it, my expectation would be that it's also something that you're trying to manage and maintain, and not something that I have to manage and maintain for you.
Wait, oh, you saying you, like, if you were speaking from the partner's perspective,
correct.
I, as a partner, wouldn't have to be managing it because you already know you have
difficulties.
Yeah,
you're aware of
this.
This is something you speak publicly about. So this is something that you should be managing. You should be, you know, you should be on top of taking your medication, those sorts of things. I understand if with doing those things, if you have an episode, I completely understand that. But if you're saying these are all the things I need to do publicly, and then privately, you're not adhering to these precautions that you know you need to take, yeah, that could be quite a challenge.
Now, in a previous episode, we have talked about loving someone with depression. Episode 26, In My Feelings. Loving and dating, or just, you know, dating and being with someone in depression and to support them. So we have talked about how that is a tricky situation to navigate, especially for someone who has no experience with mental health. But it looks like on from what I've seen, I didn't watch the show. Did you watch the show? The Chad
Not
Loves
at
Michelle?
All.
Yeah. But all the outlets that I do watch have talked about it. And it seems like
are those, Kendra? Wendy Williams?
Boom.
I don't know any other
ones. The Breakfast Club. Boom. Those are the main, and The Shade Room. Those are the main sources. Mm. So my sources have said how it seems like he participates in her mental health. I keep wanting to say wealth, but it is wealth. Mm-hmm. But in her mental health, you know, in talking to her doctors, especially when she was coming out of the facility the last time, and in going with her to counseling sessions. And then, like I said, the premise of their reality show is talking about, it's therapy, basically. But one interesting point about it is Wendy, since you mentioned Wendy was talking about the breakup, and her advice, the advice that she gave to Michelle, I thought, well, it's not great advice, but you tell me what you think. Basically, she was saying how, look, you don't need to go to therapy and go, you know, talk to somebody and all that, and, you know, have your business out there in the street because, you know, she's famous. Have your business out there in the street. Putting it out there is probably what didn't help your relationship in the first place, having this reality show. Just, hey, this is a breakup. Go home. go up under the covers, you know, send home all your staff, you know, maybe have them cook another good meal for you, send home your chef, send home your maid, everything, and just spend some time alone in your house. You
that know, away may from not the, be what she needs.
Away
right
from
now.
The paparazzi and all that, and take some time to heal. Okay.
I think she needs a support system. It sounds like she's in a space where she's not maybe able to spend time with herself alone and do that reflective piece. So she may need a support system. And I'm not opposed to her, whether that's employees or friends or whoever those folks may be. Sometimes we don't have to sit in our darkness and just figure it out. That's basically what Wendy is saying. Like, you sad, everybody be sad, figure it out.
Take some time and figure it out.
Nah, don't figure it out by yourself, because you may not be in that space, especially if she just a few months ago checked herself into a hospital. I know around here, you're not being checked into anybody's hospital unless you are psychotic, meaning that you're delusional, you're going to harm other people. And when I say delusional, I mean like severely delusional. You're going to harm other people or you're going to hurt yourself. They're just not letting people in mental health hospitals. Now, maybe Michelle Williams has more access because she's a celebrity.
Right.
But she still had to fit some sort of criteria. So I don't know if this is the time to be like, hey, just sit by yourself and get over it. She may not be able to. And I think, you know, Wendy is, you know, she's on TV. She's just saying stuff.
Right. Yeah, she's saying stuff. She's not a mental health professional.
Yeah, I don't know if she needs to. She is a hot topics professional. So, you know, I think that I don't know if she needs to sit by herself. But let's move on. Yeah. Enough about Chad and Michelle.
I was going to ask you a question related to that.
Okay.
So as far as dealing with sadness or processing sadness, you know, as you, it sounds like you're saying people handle it in different ways and you have to do what's right for you. How do you handle sadness?
How do I handle sadness?
Mm-hmm.
I sit with it. Yeah. I'm a person, I allow myself to be sad. I don't try to hold back. Mm-hmm. You know, if possible, continue with my daily processes if I can. I do, you know, try to process. I try to go to bed early. I try to, you know, talk to people who I think could, you know, support me and say some encouraging things. But definitely, I don't try to rush it along. I think a lot of times when we're sad about stuff, we try to, oh my gosh, I'm sad about this. I need to hurry up and get over it. And it's stuff I'm still getting over. And I'm fine with that. It's like some stuff you just don't get over. I don't really believe in getting over many things. I think you learn to live with things easier. It's not like, oh, if your grandmother dies, you know, you'll feel better about it. You'll just be over it. It's like, no, I'm still sad about it. I'm able to function better with knowing that she's not here anymore. This is just an example. Mm-hmm. That she's not here anymore, but it doesn't get easier day by day. I'm just able to function.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of times we have to allow ourselves to just sit and be uncomfortable, to cry, maybe sometimes call off work, talk to supportive people, try to still engage in a lot of the things that you do. I think sometimes we will, like, take a very long time to stop. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, all of the extracurriculars, but sometimes, you know, we do have to give ourselves space to be sad at work. Like, you know, I may need to step away and go to the bathroom because that may not stop for months. And that's okay, because people then know, like, oh my gosh, she's sad. Like, this thing happened to her. And that's okay to have that vulnerable space with people. So I allow myself to sort of sit with it and just be, you know, sad and uncomfortable.
Feel it.
And feel it. Yeah.
That's Wendy's song. Or like Jillian Michaels says, get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Mm.
She means in a physical way, but it applies emotionally.
Yeah.
All right. So what I'm into, what are you into, Nedra?
Lately I've been watching some 90s movies. movies that I've probably seen but didn't really understand them because I was too young or... I probably shouldn't have been watching them or something.
Menace to Society?
No, I've seen that a thousand times.
I watched that way
times.
Too young. I'm like, huh, yes.
I understood all of that.
At the time, right. Weren't you six when it came out?
Who knows?
I was nine.
But, like, no more complicated movies. And I can't even think of...
Oh, man. Like what?
You know, like these psychological thriller type movies?
The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
I love The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Where is that anyway?
Oh, Sleeping with the Enemy. Anything with Julia Roberts in it.
Boundaries. Reaching back. Now that you know as an adult, like your personal professional interest and specialty is in codependency and boundaries and assertiveness. Mm-hmm. Reaching back to those movies, you can analyze them with different eyes.
Oh, they're so
grown up Nedra glasses. It looks different than little kid Nedra glasses.
Yeah, the glasses are better as well. but yeah, I've been watching some 90s movies. The other day, I watched Hollywood Shuffle, which is Robert Townsend's
first
movie.
Where did you watch it?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay. I have not seen it, but I've heard about it so much. And recently, he was on The Breakfast Club giving an interview talking about the Five Heartbeats documentary. Okay, Amazon Prime, I'm going to look for it.
So one of my favorite comedies is I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. Mm-hmm. And so, now I saw that when I was a kid, and I remember like my cousins and stuff were like cracking up. I didn't get the jokes. But like when I was in college, I rewatched it, and it was hilarious. And I watched it, I bought the DVD, I like watched it all the time. Now that is like my favorite movie I can quote. I love it. So, Hollywood Shuffle, like, I didn't remember seeing it, but I hear a lot about it. So, I was like, okay, let me watch it. And then I just watched this movie, and I cannot think of the name of it, but it's with Gene Hackman, and he's a doctor, and they do these experiments on these people, and they start having, like, these weird side effects, but it's supposed to be for good. I cannot remember the name of it. By the time of this airing, I will put it in the show notes because I can't think of the name of the movie.
You'll think about it as soon as
we're done. I'm going to watch Malice. That is on my list. That is on Amazon Prime, but you have to rent it.
Oh. We're talking about what you're into right now.
Oh, current movies?
Not what you're going to be into.
Oh, okay.
But about the two movies you mentioned, Hollywood Shuffle and I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. So not understanding those as a kid. Like, I saw I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker as a kid, but not Hollywood Shuffle. But I remember not understanding and getting the joke that those are both movie jokes about other movies.
Right.
That they're satirical. So I'm like, okay. Wait, isn't this a serious 70s movie? Like, what's funny? I don't get it. And now I get it that they're both making fun of other movies, you know?
Right.
Adult sarcasm.
That in addition to my Christmas movies, and I just finished watching Succession, which comes on
HBO.
You said you started it.
I started it. It was interesting. I liked the family dynamic aspect. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really climactic. Like, it was just kind of like,
through. That last episode was of the season. It was really good. I feel like maybe around episode 4 is when I was like, oh my gosh, this show is so good.
I think it
seems like a lot of shows now, they have these strong character development things, and it takes few episodes to like lay the foundation. And I know there are a lot of shows where the first episode you turn it on, somebody's
like, bam,
somebody jumps out a window, you're like, oh, what happened?
Bam, blip, boom.
But this wasn't that show.
No, it wasn't.
It's like it has to, you know, it got to a point where it was like, oh my gosh, I gotta watch this next episode.
Yeah.
So I just finished up Succession, and what am I reading?
Did they have a Thanksgiving or a holiday episode?
Yeah.
I feel like I heard something about that being really good.
It was very good.
I do like holiday episodes about dysfunctional families involved. Okay.
Yeah. So,
what are you reading?
Gosh. I read Michelle Obama's book. We talked about that the last time.
Mm-hmm. That was probably enough for 2 months.
That was enough for 2 months. So I'm actually on the prowl for something good right now. I just finished listening to, Crush It by Gary Vee.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of a book about
motivation. Is it motivation?
It's about social media, really. It's about using social media in a way that works for you as an entrepreneur and just, you know, driving home all your goals, blah, 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 blah. It was a very good book.
Yeah.
Some huge takeaways. I'll be posting something about it on my Instagram feed pretty soon. What are you into?
I just want to say one thing about Gary Vee. So I will think about reading that book. I do follow him on Instagram, and I have seen his YouTube videos, and that dude is intense.
He is intense.
Like, he's always on 1,000. I'd be like, you need to calm down. I'm sure your pressure is up.
His book is on 1,000.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
your sugar is up.
So, this may need to be a whole nother podcast topic, but Gary V is certainly, I have a friend, and she always say one of them people who work, you know, like one of those people who talk about work yourself to death.
All the time, yes.
And his book is very much about that. There is no balance in nothing that he says.
He's like, married with kids.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, so use social media for 8 hours a day and do blah, blah, blah. And you're like, 8 hours?
I'm
like,
always working, no matter what. When I leave this podcast,
I'm going to work.
I'm going to the YouTube studio. I got a show there. And when I get done, I'm going to a book setting. And then I'm going to meet Don, because he manages artists or something. Like, he says, I'm going to meet my artist at midnight in Times Square to review his video shoot.
He is like, work nonstop. Which, you know, I think it can work in some ways for some people. But I think some people believe that that's the key to success.
Right.
But I think it depends on what type of success you want and what you consider success to be.
Right.
And for him, success is very much tied to work, 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 work. And at the very beginning of the book, he acknowledges that he's that way. And he's like, yeah, sleep, that's great. But work. Like, try to sleep as least as possible and work, but
and that's
sleep.
That's why he looks so tightly wound. His eyes, he looks like he might be dehydrated even. Like, he just seems so tightly wound. Is he happy? That's what I wonder, but
I mean, he definitely seems happy. I think he has some wonderful things that he says that are very helpful. I think the rate at which he does some things is a little intense, and I wouldn't necessarily do all of that, but I also consider myself the sort of person, like, I like to work. I like to work a lot. I like to, I like to work. I find it enjoyable. So I do a lot of things as well. And I often find people saying stuff to me like, how do you find time to have a podcast? How do you find time to post on Instagram? How do you find time to... And I think you do find time for things that you enjoy doing or things that give you some benefit or something like that. But I also like to watch a lot of TV and read books and travel and cook. And, you know, like, there are other things that I like to do. So you do get the impression from him, like, it's like, I don't have time for anything other than work. So I think, like, with me, I try to just mix it all in together. Like, I'm watching TV while I'm cooking dinner.
Right.
I am listening to a book while I am typing notes.
Really? So with that, I find I like to chill. I like to work. And even if I enjoy doing it, I like to do it. But I also like to chill. And I've also found that I'm not good at multitasking.
Mm.
You know, like, even as good as I think I am, and, you know, my partner pointed this out to me, it's like, you're not that good at multitasking. Not as good as you think you are. I'm like, what
most
do you mean?
Most people aren't.
I'm doing this. I'm so good. But then I look back at it, and I'm like, well, that note is not so great. Like you said, watching something while I'm doing notes, well, that note is not so great. Or, you know, this I could have done better at. Mm-hmm. And one time I was juggling so many things that I literally dropped a couple of important things. I was like, oh, I'm doing too much. Let me pull back and chill out. So, yeah, I try not to multitask as much as possible. Because I'm not good at it.
Multitasking is not a good thing.
Yeah.
And I do know that when I'm multitasking and doing notes, it definitely, like, takes me longer to do them and that sort of thing because I am multitasking.
Out.
However,
you're still going to do it.
No. Sometimes when I do, like, notes and I'm watching something on TV is because I need to catch up and I have no motivation to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I allot myself that time to watch TV as a motivate. Like, you can watch this if you go through these notes from 2 days ago. Because
your reward.
It's my reward.
Work reward
it's my
system.
Work reward. Because if not, if I do them quietly, I'm like, I'm not doing this. I'm going to do such and such. So it's like I have to reward myself like, oh, wow, look, you did your notes because you were able to watch This Is Us. So.
Okay, so I'm going to write down as a topic the inefficiency of multitasking.
It's...
Okay, and then really quickly what I'm into is I just watched this documentary on Netflix called Fat, Salt, Acid, Heat.
Mm.
And it was, I heard, it's by a chef who wrote a book by the same title. And I heard her doing an interview on one of my other sources, really, which is Fresh Air. And I can't remember her name now, but it was the interview was very interesting. And she talks about how in all her travels of tasting all these different foods in different countries and her work in a restaurant in the business, she's learned that the four main elements of good cooking are fat, salt, acid, and heat. And so in the four parts of the Netflix documentary series, it's focusing on that. So I learned a lot about, you know, like the importance of having fat. And here in American culture, we tend to fat shame, literally low fat, non-fat, no fat, you know, and all these type of things. But she's like, no, you need fat, you know, of course, good quality fat, natural right. fat, butters, animal fats, you know, milk is a fat. And then you need this to make a dish taste good and hold well. And then salt. And she talked about how many different types of salt. There's like a million different types of salt out there. And so it was very interesting. I learned about the importance of salt. And and she uses a lot of salt in her food. And again, we tend to salt shame, but simultaneously salt rain on people. Like things are so salty, but it's artificial salt. And then acid, like things like citrus fruits. She talked a lot about, you know, oranges, lemons, like the importance and the power of citrus fruits and fermentation and how honey is acidic. And mm-hmm. I never knew that, mm-hmm. but honey can be acidic. And then of course heat, like how to cook things and how unstable cooking in the stove, in the oven can be. So yeah, I learned a lot. And so now I'm like, whenever I'm cooking, okay, let me make sure I got some fat, got some salt, got some citrus in there somehow. And of course I'm gonna cook it. So I got some heat. So it was very interesting.
Okay. I just thought about something random about your sadness question.
Oh,
I remember I was sad about something and somebody texted me like, how are you doing? And I was like, not well, I'm very sad.
Yeah. Right.
And they were like, oh, was
like. But did they know that you had gone through something?
Yes, but they were checking on me. But I think the typical response is to be
fine.
Like,
I'm trying.
I'm okay. And I'm like, I'm over here okay. And I'm not doing well.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a similar response from you about something. Like, hey, you know, I'm sure, you know, what you feeling or whatever. I don't know what I said, but I'm going to say, yeah, I'm sad. So, you know. I was like, oh, okay, well, good.
It's like,
good, be sad.
Good for you.
Yeah. But like you said, I mean, I like to sit, if I'm feeling sad, I like to sit in it and just, you know, feel my feelings. Because I'm not the most emotionally feeling person. So the way that I feel it better is when I'm by myself. And so, you know, feel my emotions. And sometimes I like to watch sad things or listen to sad music if I'm already in that mood, because it just kind of helps me to sit in it and express it and get it out a little bit and then move on. Because I
used to be like, oh, I want to listen to sad music. Yeah. But I've discovered it just makes me feel worse.
Think it makes me feel worse. I just kind of, I get some stuff out. Like singing a good Adele song, because I'm a terrible singer. I'm not good at it. But when I'm alone, I just belt out whatever I want. And so that helps me. It's like a purging catharsis type thing for me. And then, you know, that kind of helps me move through it. And then I'm like, okay, now on to something cheerful. You know, I'll watch something that makes me laugh or that's fun to watch on TV and dancing, you know. But anyway, that's how I work through my sadness when I'm sad. Okay, so speaking of sadness... No, this is not speaking of sadness.
Oh, I'm like, what are we about to talk about?
Our topic of the day.
What is our topic?
Our topic, well, it could be perceived as sadness, but infertility and the effects on mental and emotional health.
Okay.
So we're talking about the Gabrielle Union interview that she did with Oprah on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday podcast. And it's a two-parter. Each part is 30 minutes. And it's Gabrielle Union, the actress, and her husband, Dwayne Wade, the professional basketball player. And they're sitting there talking about their challenges with infertility, with in vitro, with surrogacy and public perception and all that. So that's what we're talking about. And you listen to Super Soul podcasts regularly, right? That's your because Oprah is your godmother.
Oprah is my godmother.
Yeah. And Oprah is a brilliant interviewer.
She is a brilliant interviewer. And everything you say nice about her, I'm just going to repeat it and say it louder.
She always has the most jazzy glasses.
She has the most jazzy glasses.
Queen of the crisp white button-up shirt.
Best button. Okay, so... yeah, I listen to Super Soul, particularly when people of interest are on there. And I did read Gabrielle Union's book, We'll Need More Wine, or something along those lines. Okay. So I did read her book, which she talked about this a little bit. I wasn't all up in arms when she posted a picture of her baby on Instagram, but I was interested to see what she had to say on Super Soul. And, you know, they did go very in-depth about their fertility struggles and the channels that they took to actually have a baby. And I think it is very refreshing to hear, and hopefully, you know, it'll start a conversation with people about how to talk to people about fertility and having kids and that sort of thing, because I think this, you know, people just say the
darndest things.
Thank you. people say very interesting things.
Wait,
when
hold
you're
on.
Going through something. Go ahead.
Hold that thought. Before we get into talking about that, I want to give a quick summary of their fertility journey for those who don't know. Okay. So, they were married. They said within a year they were trying to conceive. They had difficulties from the beginning. They did several rounds of IVF. She had a miscarriage, and that was, you know, that was, they were excited. That was the worst one, because they were excited and telling people, and they had to come back and tell people, well, no, she didn't make it. The baby died, you know? And so then throughout that, over the next few years, they had 8 or 9 more miscarriages. And the challenges of being in the public perception, because people were asking them, when are you guys going to have a baby? When are you going to, you know, having those questions and trying and keep trying. And she felt so much pressure to make this work. To have a baby, to give him a baby. She's reading public comments, and people are saying he deserves a younger woman who can give him a baby, because she's older than him by a couple of years.
10.
That's
like 10 years.
I didn't realize it was that much. Mm-hmm. Finally, you know, after going through all these rounds of IVF and it not working, she ultimately decided, he had to put his foot down and say, I want you to be healthy and happy. This is not working. Let's explore other options. So they explore surrogacy. They got a surrogate. They've had a baby. So now they have a baby. Now, the Instagram post that you're talking about was right after the baby was born. Mm-hmm. And there's a picture of her in the hospital bed in the gown holding the baby. Mm-hmm. And people were giving her a lot of, you know, smack about that, because they're saying, well, why is she acting like she had this baby? Why is she pretending like she had a baby when she didn't? And it says they had a surrogate. You know, they set this picture up, you know, just the appearance of it. So they addressed that in the Oprah interview, and saying that they were trying to, you know, she explained it when she shouldn't have to explain it, but, you know, she did. Okay. So now back to what you were saying, Nedra, about how people ask you questions and make these comments and feel entitled to say things about one person's fertility or infertility or whatever.
I think that people have expectations of other people, of maybe of themselves even. Like, well, I was 23 when I had a baby. Why don't you have a baby? What's wrong with you? You have a,
she,
you
know, just,
or, or maybe they are so used to people in that demographic, or as soon as people get married, or I don't know.
Right.
I think people just say things and they don't really think about what they're saying. They just say what they've been programmed to say. It's like,
right,
you know, if you say, hey, I have a boyfriend, the next question is, well, how long have you been together?
Right.
When are you gonna get married?
Yeah.
When you get married, when y'all gonna have some kids? It's just like there are these automated sort of things that you ask people whenever something is happening. I mean, shoot, you don't even have to have a boyfriend for people to start asking you about having kids. You get to a certain age, it's like, so you just don't want kids. It's like, no, I'm 30. You know, I don't have a mate yet. So I'm not that I want to have a baby with. So, you know, it's one of those things. And I think it's such a private thing. I mean, when you think about, man, those miscarriages, 9 miscarriages.
And as she was going through those, she's in constant IVF cycles. So sometimes she'd be bloated from the hormones and people say, oh, she's pregnant now, you know, but really she was bloated. She gave an example of how she went to a ball, tried on, when she had the dress fitting, she was flat. Her stomach was flat. By 6 o'clock that evening before the ball, she was so bloated that she looked like she was 6 months pregnant. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that started the baby bump watch, as she and other people have described it. And, of course, there's no baby because she's in these IVF cycles. And people are just always wondering, oh, someone gains a little weight. Oh, is she pregnant? Is she pregnant? And these are public figures, so they're getting pressures. And she did say, like, she felt pressure from people around them and the public to procreate. You know, we are these two beautiful people. We had this great relationship. We love each other. We're both of, you know, great age. He already has kids. Like, the pressure for us to now make a baby together. She talked about that. But even regular people feel those pressures from their family. When I say regular, I mean not famous. Were you going to say something else?
I was just going to say that, you know, the whole piece about miscarriage, I think that there is some sort of shame, and she talked about this, like the shame of just not being able to carry your own child, whether, you know, you miscarry and then go on to have children, or you just miscarry, you end up not being able to have children. Like, just the idea that you're not able to have a baby or have a healthy baby, that there is some loss in that. And I think that even with that, people don't accept that as a real grieving process because, you know, a lot of times people will say things, again, being insensitive. Oh, you could just try again. Oh, there'll be another time, as if they know what the future of this looks like.
And that just one more try is going to work.
Yeah. And I think,
so
you know,
get over it this time.
When she talked about, like, the first baby and just, like, being so excited and just, like, telling everybody and then, oh, there is no baby. Like, that's a devastating loss because it's kind of like you have this dream and then it's crushed. And you don't know if you can have that dream again. And sometimes you can and sometimes you can't. And again, I think this is where, you know, just this crowd sensitivity needs to come into play because people have no clue how people process and what sort of things they actually go through.
Yeah, Gabrielle did say she had feelings of failure, of feeling defective or less worthy because she did go through most of her life not really wanting kids, not really thinking that she would have kids until she became stepmom to Dwayne Wade's kids. And then that made her want to have her own with him. So she had all these feelings, you know, and then feeling like, well, she said how reading the comments people were saying about her usually don't bother her, but when it strikes a nerve at something that you're already thinking about yourself, then it hurts. So the comments about her not being able to, I'm doing quotes, give him a baby and being too old, she already felt that way about herself. So that, you know, struck a nerve. But she did also mention this, I don't know if, I guess a disorder or an illness. I'm not quite sure how to describe it, but endometriosis.
And good job, Kendra.
Thank you. it's a diagnosis that is basically like a difficulty with the, I didn't quite understand it how she, but she explained it really well.
Endometriosis, like, but not as easily diagnosed as endometriosis is often mistaken as endometriosis, but a lot of the cures and the treatment methods that they have are not even as advanced as it would be for something like an endometriosis. And
premature ovarian failure too.
Right. And it causes premature ovarian failure. And it's harder to diagnose because, you know, I'm sure it's new. Not a lot of doctors have information. Probably not a lot of tests have been developed to be able to diagnose it. And she, like many women, and I love that she talked about this, and this could be a whole podcast episode. I feel like we say that a lot, but she talked about this thing that happened with the doctors, that she started having, like, you know, these periods that were really heavy and they said, oh, we'll get on birth control.
Yep.
And so you get on the birth control, and then when it's time for you to conceive, you don't find out until then that really that really heavy period was because you had some sort of issue that wasn't detected, because their method for correcting it was like, oh, you'll feel better, just get on birth control.
Mm-hmm.
And so she talked about that a bit, that, you know, that kind of got in the way of her getting any treatment or even being diagnosed, because she quickly, you know, once a doctor says get on birth control, this will make you feel better, she didn't have the knowledge to know that that also stops you from actually having a period.
A real period. You think you're having one because you are having one. It's regulated. It's on schedule.
It's not a period.
It's light, but it's not a real, it's not a true period. You are shedding, but it's not your period.
You're having breakthrough breathing.
So I think, you know, right now there is a lot of talk about the lack of education, of care given to women in women's health issues.
Yes.
Medically, legislatively, like, you know, socially, everything. And so she was just told once she's ready to conceive, oh, well, it's your age, you know. And that whole geriatric pregnancy, if you're over 35, that's some bull, you know. But she was told, well, it's your age. That's why you're having a hard time conceiving. Come to find out that she does have this diagnosis, that she was, after going to countless specialists and doctors and all this, that she was given this adenomyosis. And then she mentioned Leah, or the girl, the girl who wrote Girls. She's a young woman at 25.
Lena Dunham.
Right. At 25 with the same diagnosis and the same difficulty. And it got me to thinking about my diagnosis, because I was diagnosed with premature ovarian failure when I was 25, 26. And I get the same treatment. Well, here, just take the pill, and that'll regulate your period. And, you know, it'll give you the estrogen that you need, because premature ovarian failure, as she described it, is very similar to adenomyosis. You know, you have low egg reserves. It's, you know, the irregular period. Now, I had no issues with the period, though, for a long, like never, until I moved from Detroit to here, North Carolina, to Charlotte. And then I started having issues, and I thought it was stress related. And that's what I was told by the doctors also. But anyway, so now it's making me think, well, let me look further into this diagnosis, you know, to see, because I've always wondered, you know, was that the most accurate diagnosis, you know, for me, and what else is out there? I've always wondered, but I never really looked into it. I've never really tried to get pregnant either. So, I can't say never really. I haven't ever tried to get pregnant.
So how do you sort of deal with the questions from people about you not having kids or wanting kids or any of those sort of things? Because you're a woman of a certain age. And
yeah.
I said that like we're 72, but...
Wendy says a woman of a particular age.
No, I think you're over 30.
Yeah.
Let's say over 25. You know, if you're over 25, people are bound to start asking.
Yeah. That's generous. I would say over 20. I have been asked that question several times since my 20s, and I'm 37 now, and I've been in a long-term relationship. So even not being in a relationship and then being in a relationship, you know, the longer I've been in it, that's been the main focus. So you don't have kids yet? You don't have kids? So the way I've learned to answer that question is thinking about how I feel about it myself. And I give enough information because I'm fine with talking about it. So I might say things depending on who's asking me. And it's usually someone who feels like we have at least enough of a rapport to talk about it. You know, I'll say something like, no, I don't have kids. Oh, really? Why not? You don't like kids? I like kids. I just don't have any, you know?
Well, people see people who don't have kids as like, air quotes, selfish, as people who probably have a lot of problems or just all of these bad things.
Not nurturing.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like nobody would ever choose not to have kids. But I think sometimes, you know, people do. It's not it's not every, you know, little girl or little boy's dream to, you know, be a parent. And I think that if that's a part of your process, then you know, that's a part of your process.
Right. And so when you say it is a choice, then people do assume it's because I don't like kids, you know, but I work with kids. I like them enough. You know, I don't know if I want to have one at home living with me, but I do like them. But So for me, it is basically, it is like a choice, even though knowing that if it wasn't a choice, I would be reproductively challenged to do it. And mm-hmm. so I'll even say that, you know, well, I'm, you know, I might be reproductively challenged, but it's not something that I feel like I need to do in my life. And that's why I don't have mm-hmm. kids, you know? But yeah, just, yeah, people feel like they need to, they, you know, like I should want to have kids, because I would be a great parent. Like, I mean, I know that. I'm all stable and balanced and, you know, I work
okay,
and all that.
Okay, stop tooting your own, you know what I'm saying? I'm just saying, horn.
Speaking of kids, my kid wants to go outside. But have you been asked that question about wanting to have kids before you had kids or wanting
Absolutely.
To have more kids?
Absolutely. People certainly, once you have kids, people certainly want you to have more. And I have two girls, and I always get the question of, don't you want to try for a boy? Don't you want a boy? And I'll say, oh, no, I'm fine. And people will go on and on. But your
husband?
Your mm-hmm. husband wants a boy. You should have a boy.
Oh, you need to give him at least one boy.
You need to give him at least one boy. And
like,
all
I can control
stuff.
What comes out.
And we are so okay with having two kids. It is, I'm like I say certainly to people, like, no, I'm fine. Oh, you should want. And I'm like, no, I'm
Why?
Fine. Two
Why
is,
should you want to have more mouths to feed?
Because people feel like
more
they're supposed to be
to
this,
get.
Like, rhythm and... I don't know. Like, I talked earlier about, you know, like, all of the things that I like to do. And, you know, just... I feel like two kids, that's, you know, that's plenty.
What about
I don't
the people...
feel like I have to have more kids. I think for mm-hmm. people who want more kids, I think that's fine. But I think you can have as many or as little kids as you want to have if that's what you and your partner or you and yourself decide.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, what if you decided to stop at one? Like, I think people really have a problem when somebody only has one kid, like planned on having one kid mm-hmm. and that's it because they see that as selfish. Mm-hmm. I was like, but I've already given all of myself to one being. Like, how mm-hmm. is that selfish? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so... Gabrielle Union talked about that too, just being asked these questions and, you know, again, it, you know, depending on how you feel about the situation, it can strike a nerve. And people had judgments about the surrogacy also. So when they did decide to do that, they just, you know, just the judgments of, oh, well, you couldn't do it yourself. You had to pay somebody. Or since she's an actress in Hollywood, oh, you didn't want to mess up your body. People have said that about Kim Kardashian mm-hmm. as well, who recently
had
a baby.
She had fertility issues starting off, though.
She
and
did.
She had, like,
she had bad
anema
not bad, but, mm-hmm.
and all this stuff. It's like, you know, sometimes it's yep. just, did I say that right?
Edema.
Okay.
Swelling, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think sometimes it's just, it's a very
she
hefty
very,
press. Mm-hmm. process on your body.
She had very difficult pregnancies, the two.
Yeah, so it's like, I think people are just misinformed about most things that have nothing to do with them, and we have to allow people to live in whatever way they want to, as long as it's healthy for them and other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody was harmed in the production of me having a
right.
baby.
Right. Like, it wasn't so. The Handmaid's Tale. Like, they didn't get a girl and, you know, keep her in the attic until they were ready for her to have the baby. You
yeah.
know, this was, you know, a contract that they worked out. And they were saying how they were involved in a part of everything as much as they could because this pregnancy was happening outside of the both of them.
Right.
Yeah. And it sounds like her, Gabrielle Union's difficulty is more with carrying a child because of the endometriosis, not so much with making a child. Like, I was trying to figure out, so does that mean that her,
no,
her eggs are viable? Right.
So she explained it as, she can get pregnant, she can't hold a baby because the endometriosis outgrows
right.
the actual fetus and kind of smothers it out.
Right.
And so okay. she's not able to carry a pregnancy beyond a certain length of time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So she has to basically have a carrier, a
right.
surrogate, to be able to have a healthy child because it's just not anything that she can naturally do within her own body.
Right.
But
she can be a part of the creation of the
correct.
Of the process. And I have the opposite problem. My eggs don't develop. So because of the premature ovarian failure, the ovaries don't produce eggs that mature and develop enough to be able to be implanted. So the doctor, as they told me, you know, 10 years ago when I talked to him about this, I could carry a child, but I can't make one. So I need to get an egg from somewhere. I don't want to do all that.
So I had a cousin.
Would you give me an egg?
I had a cousin. I have a ton at home. I have a cousin, and she was told when she was like 20, like she had
premature ovarian failure.
And is that PCOS?
Well, no, I was going to say not polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Okay.
Wrong initials. A lot of younger women get told that with the irregular period, like
so
as a symptom.
So she had PCOS, and the doctor was like, you're probably not going to have any kids. And she had, like, maybe a few years later, like, two kids back to back.
Right.
Hasn't had any since.
Right.
But she did have two back to back. So I think sometimes, just like with this whole, hey, get on birth control, you'll feel better. I was told that too by a doctor, like, oh, you have cramps, get on birth control.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so afraid to come off birth control, I started seeing a natural medicine doctor.
Mm-hmm.
My friend, Dr. Kavette Parks, here in Charlotte.
Yep.
And she
of the lifestyle clinic.
Of the lifestyle clinic. And she gave me a whole regimen of supplements, like vitamins. And mm-hmm. the main two vitamins that were very effective for me was magnesium and calcium. Mm-hmm. And I started taking those maybe for about a month. And I don't have cramps anymore. I used to literally take painkillers, like muscle relaxers.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, be sick and all of this stuff. And I started seeing Kavette, and she was like, yeah, you have a deficiency in calcium. I'm like, since I was 14?
Right.
She's like, yes, like, calcium is a very common thing that people are deficient in. And if you're deficient, like, your muscles can't contract in a certain way. And when you have your cycle, it gets really bad. And now, like, maybe a week before I start, like, taking my calcium supplements, and I feel great. And I'm not saying that's the solution for everybody, but I do think we have to be open to getting different perspectives from different doctors, and maybe different perspectives from different types of doctors. Because, you know, also a part of my story is I was telling, you know, went to a doctor, I was telling about this issue, and they was like, oh, you have endometriosis, it's going to be hard for you to conceive, you're going to have this procedure. I did not have endometriosis.
Mm-hmm.
I had a calcium deficiency. So it's like, you know, that's a very scary thing to even have to think about, like, mm-hmm. you possibly have this thing, you don't even really have this thing. Mm-hmm. But I started seeing Kavette pretty much right after that doctor. And mm-hmm. so, you know, my concerns were eased quite a bit, because she was like, no, you have a deficiency, which mm-hmm. is not going to get in the way
a mineral deficiency.
But I think so often, you know, people do what they know. And that has been the prescription to just, hey, do this and this will solve any fertility issue you're having. Or, hey, this will solve any women's health issue you're having. And I think it needs to be a bit more than that.
Yeah, a lot of doctors have, like, a bag of tricks that they kind of resort to that are easy. And I'm glad you brought up Kavette, because, yeah, I have a similar story with Kavette as well. And when I got my diagnosis of premature ovarian failure, and take the pill, that'll regulate you. That'll have you feeling like a normal 26-year-old, because I was having menopausal symptoms. Like, I was having hot flashes. I was having, like, kind of, like, headache-type feelings and things like that. And so I was on the pill, and I knew I wasn't going to be on it for a long time. I was like, I'll just do this while I figure out the next thing, or figure out who to go to next or whatever. And I met Kavette, and I was like, yes, scheduling an appointment with you. Yes, naturopathic doctor. I've been looking for one of you. And I started working with her and working with my diet and the supplements, and it pretty much knocked out all of those menopausal feelings and discomforts that I was having. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't actually get a period back regularly, but it did help me with, like I said, the discomforts, and that was of high value to me. So I saw on the Breakfast Club I don't know all their names, but there are three doctors, or naturopathic doctors, who have been on there a couple of times, and they were talking about how over prescribed the pill is, because it is used as
in the bag of tricks,
right, for everything.
Other things,
I was prescribed it, and my sister was, for acne, you know, for breakouts, for bad cramps.
Instead
for
of just having you correct your diet.
Right.
Exactly.
Or wash my face better as a teenager.
It's too hard to tell these kids to wash their face twice a day and to eat vegetables and fruit.
Yeah. A teenager who's starting to wear makeup? No, I'm sure you're washing your face fine. But yeah, so they were saying how it's just, it's overprescribed, and that's a darn shame. So, I mean, but it's all, like I said, the deficiency in knowledge and research and sharing of women's health. And some of that is on, it's on us women, because we don't share and talk a lot about our struggles because of those feelings of shame or feeling defective or hard to talk about, you know. But also, you know, the medical doctors and the state legislators who want to make rules and laws about the education and treatment and research and women's health. It sucks in America. What is your pack light tip for infertility and the effects on a person's mental and emotional health?
I would say find a support system, and find a therapist that is particularly skilled in dealing with women who have infertility issues. There are, in most places, there are some sort of specialist that has built a practice around helping people who have infertility or even grief, postpartum, those sorts of things, I think could be very helpful. And having a support system who understands and teaching people how to talk to you. We sometimes just let people say things because we don't know how to address it, but it's not okay for, it's particularly the same people or people who are close to you to be in your business in a way that makes you feel uncomfortable. So you do have the power to say to them, you know, hey, I really appreciate if you stop asking me about having kids. It really makes me feel uncomfortable. Hey, we're not ready to have kids yet. And when, you know, I feel there's a time where maybe I'll be ready, I will talk to you about it. Please don't ask me anymore. You know, there are all sorts of ways. I'm sure you could Google a whole list of ways to tell people you don't want to talk about your fertility issues. Because really, it's not anybody's business.
Okay. And one of the emotional and mental health effects of infertility challenges is communicating about those challenges. So my pack light tip is for that. First, in self-awareness building, think about how you feel about your fertility challenges and how you want to communicate those feelings. I'm a fan of scripts, writing scripts or thinking about scripts, but basically thinking about the statements and responses to difficult questions or social situations ahead of time. Because as we said, people throw these questions out regularly and often it's the same question. So plan out the responses that you feel most comfortable giving and leave it at that. So when someone asks, why don't you have kids? I have some fertility challenges that I'm working through, and if or when something changes, I may update you, so no need to ask again. Or something that I say personally, I don't have kids because I don't have kids, but I do have a dog.
Pack light.
Pack light. Nedra, where can they find you?
I am on Instagram at Nedra Tawab. I also have a website, www.nedratawab.com. On my website, you will find information for my 2019 Empowered Planner. And also, I have some really helpful worksheets for people who are looking to improve themselves. Kendra, where can they find you?
And I am on IG at KendraT.the.slp, and my website is www.KendraTsays.com. I post communication health tips and information for people and parents of people with speech differences, communication differences, and difficulties and social difficulties. Also, there's information about my book, Wordplay Crossword Puzzle Book, A Different World Edition, because there are so many self-care and brain-stimulating and language benefits to doing crossword puzzles. And right now, my book sales are temporarily suspended because I am producing another book and online classes. So check in with my Instagram and website to stay tuned for that. On Instagram, we are at Pack Light Podcast, and there we post updates about our show episodes and topics and things like that. So check in with us in all those places.
Hey guys, if you like our podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us. If you do not like our podcast, please send us an email or hit us up on social media and tell us. Don't bring our rankings down.
All reviews matter. You said that before.
Except for bad ones.
Good reviews matter.
It's real. Elevated elegance on another element. And she keep it genuine. Special dedication going out to my.
I hope you be well in or in or blah, 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 blah. I want to start over.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you leave me in? It makes me feel better. I don't want to say that either. That was too long. Do it again.
So, Nedra, where can they find you?
You can hit me up on, nope, start over again.
Hit how about you? Up. How about you just ask me first?
Nope. Do it one
maybe
more time.
You. Maybe
one
you'll
more time. One more time.
Say that and remember, guys.
And remember, guys. Pack light.
No, no, no. Subscribe, rate, and review that. I want to re-record that.